Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States versus Weaver. Mr. Baldwin.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jeff Baldwin and I represent Jeffrey Weaver, who is appealing the district court's sentence from the Southern District of Indiana in this case. Mr. Weaver pled guilty to count one of an indictment charging him with possession, a conspiracy to possess, with intent to distribute and distribute 50 grams or more of actual methamphetamine. Mr. Weaver was sentenced to 235 months to be followed by a period of supervised release of 5 years. The sole issue before the district court, as well as the sole issue before this court, is whether Mr. Weaver was deserving of a role enhancement, which also disqualified him from being safety valve eligible.
How would you define the manager-supervisor level for purposes of this sentencing enhancement? It's not organizer, you know,
right.
Leader. So where do we, if we're going to write an opinion that actually clarifies this, what would it say?
I wish I had a great answer to that. I don't. But I think that when you distill down that particular question, what we're talking about is someone who has control over others, beyond controlling his own actions, beyond simply saying, I will supply you with this. As this court has noted, a supplier is simply not enough to
right, just a seller, you know, somebody says
right.
This is the price, you know, of course it's compelling that price in some sense, but it's not control.
It's not any different than what has been noted, that a person who loans money has a right to say, I'm going to loan you so much money. When you front drugs, that's basically what you're doing. And Mr. Weaver was doing that. The district court and the government put a great deal of emphasis on the fact that he controlled, Mr. Weaver, controlled how much he was going to sell, when he was going to sell it, and on what terms he would sell it. Well, that is simply a wholesaler dictating the terms of, I will sell you this much on credit. It is not controlling over whether the retailer goes out and buys product from someone else to have more than what I'm willing to front them, so to speak.
So what you're talking about is essentially a whole set of terms of the offer which the other party can take or leave.
Yes. And it's funny you would use the term terms, because that is what I think got hung up in the district court, was this whole idea of the terms that were used to say, okay, he is in control. For instance, the district court placed a portion of the reliance on finding the enhancement was appropriate in recruitment, that term. Well, it would be Mr. Weaver's position. He didn't recruit anybody. Mr. Wilkie was already selling.
The district court actually found there was no recruitment, didn't the judge?
I wasn't clear, I'll be honest, as to whether he found that there wasn't a recruitment, but I think that factor at least was considered when he said
he was not engaged actively in the recruitment of other distributors. That's Judge Lawrence, I believe.
Right. Yeah. He didn't say he was actively recruiting, but there was some idea that by supplying Mr. Wilkie, he had somehow become in control of Mr. Wilkie, which was not the case. Mr. Wilkie was already dealing methamphetamine prior to Mr. Weaver supplying him. That was not in dispute. But the whole idea that certain terms were used, recruitment, control, I mean, the whole idea that get or done is control over somebody, that's simply saying, get my money back to me.
Sounds like Larry the Cable Guy.
Yes. Judge, I can't choose the terms my client uses in text, but the whole point was...
If only you could.
Yes.
They wouldn't be in text, let's put it that way.
Okay.
But there was no control that Mr. Weaver exerted over any of his co-defendants. Mm-hmm. He simply said, here's what I will sell you. This is what I'm willing to front you at one point in time. These are my terms. Take them or leave them. He didn't say you had to do anything beyond that. He never exerted any control over any of the co-defendants. In fact, it was, I think, particularly indicative of the lack of control when the agent testified that he never gave instructions at all to Cooper, Yeadon, Markham, or Cunningham.
So what you're arguing is missing, essentially, is, you know, like if he had assigned territories or if he had assigned buyers or if he had, I mean, what he's trying to do is saying, I need to be paid back really
right.
quickly. So he is saying that. But
that's not controlling them. How they determine how they sell it, how they package it, who they sell it to. There is nothing in this that shows he was controlling anyone beyond his own activities. There was no, for instance, saying, Ms. Dale, Wilkie's short this week. Take over so he can cover his customers, so I'll resupply you later. There is no that type of coordination or control over anyone other than his own actions.
Well, Mr. Ball, what about the credit relationship? Does that suggest at least implicitly that further supply will be limited if you're not forthcoming? I mean,
I would argue that is no more than anyone else saying, I will extend you this much of a loan and won't give you any more loan until you pay it back. That's all that was. That's not controlling what you do with the money I loaned you, how you decided to spend it, how you decide what you're going to do with it. I'm not.
Well, that's on a one-time loan basis, let's say.
Okay.
But what if you have a continuing relationship, to be the case here?
Oh, this was a continuing relationship. I'm not denying that at all. This was an ongoing continuing relationship. No different, though, than if I am BP, and you own a gas station, and I say, okay, I will deliver gasoline to you on a weekly basis for this amount. But if you don't make your payments, I'm not coming back next week. That's all this was. I don't control how you sell the gasoline, what price you sell it at, or anything else.
So what you're doing is you're distinguishing between the kind of evidence that would tend to show a conspiracy, which certainly the fronting evidence is frequently relied on for, and the kind of evidence that would show a control relationship. I mean, you could have a lot of co-conspirators all at the same level, none of whom controlled anybody else.
Correct.
There's a certain amount of evidence that you're going to have to expect in any ongoing drug distribution conspiracy, and you're arguing, as I understand it, that there needs to be something more. I think we all understand the concept of control more or less. I'm not sure that captures it entirely because of the possibility that recruitment in the case law and in the guidelines, the role of recruiting others seems to get some traction for supporting the enhancement, but we don't seem to have that here.
My position is that in this case, mm-hmm. you have a supplier who exerts no control over anyone else in the conspiracy other than I will front you this much. And that supplier role is not enough for the enhancement.
If this drops out and he qualifies for the safety valve,
yes.
What's the guideline range?
It's funny you should ask that because it's still above the minimum mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a windfall mm-hmm. where he is going to not be penalized as a supplier. Actually, if my guideline calculations are correct, with the safety valve, he would still be in a sentencing range of 135 to 168 months, mm-hmm. which is in excess of the minimum mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alden. Ms. Brady?
May it please the Court, Michelle Brady on behalf of the United States. This is a case that is reviewed for clear error. Did the judge abuse his discretion when he looked at the facts that were presented to him and determined that, in fact, Mr. Weaver was manager or supervisor? And I submit that the facts support he absolutely exercised sound discretion in this case.
So where's the control? You'll agree, will you not, that simply saying, I'm going to sell you, you know, 10 grams of methamphetamine for a certain price, and the other person says, okay, that's not control.
I absolutely agree with that, Your Honor.
Even if you say, I'm going to sell it to you once a week, every Monday, I'm going to sell you this amount, and you're going to pay me.
that would not be enough to substantiate.
Also not control if you say, and if I don't get paid back within 2 hours, I won't insist that you pay me in advance, but if I don't get paid within 2 hours, I'm not going to sell you anymore. Is
correct.
That control? That's not control either.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't believe that those facts alone would substantiate a manager or supervisor role. But that's not what we have here. I think in United States v. Vargas, that's what you had. You had, if you look at those facts, you had clearly the source of supply.
Well, I'm looking at these facts, and I'm looking at what the district judge said, because the district judge obviously thinks this is a close case.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the district judge notes that he delivers the meth to the buyers whenever he feels like it. You know, he just tells them, I'm going to stop by and deliver this to you. I'm not sure why that shows control. He also, as the district judge says, is very careful in planning the delivery of the meth. Doesn't, you know, wants to make sure that there are no law enforcement officers around. I don't know why that shows control either. Get her done doesn't really sound like much control.
Well, I disagree.
Get her done or they won't. You know, I don't see where the forcing is.
Respectfully, Judge, I disagree on a couple of points. That text exchange that was clearly from the testimony, that was very indicative of this defendant's relationship with his co-defendants. That is important. It's not just that he sent that text saying, get her done. What's important, I think, is the response that that elicited from the distributor that he sent that text to.
Look, the response. Yeah, the distributor says he's really on my case. You know, I've got to do something.
Right. And I think that does demonstrate that at least in that individual's mind, absolutely, Mr. Weaver had the ability to tell him what to do.
Why? Why is that tell him what to do as opposed to just saying, I only do business with people who pay me quickly, who move the product quickly and who pay me quickly? I don't see where it's control. It's not the kind of assignment of jobs or supervision of work or something that...
There was a supervision of work. It wasn't getting done quick enough, and the defendant fixed that. Get her done, the immediate response was working on it, and then within 2 minutes, he's texting other individuals saying, hey, old boy's on my tail. I got to find other people who want it because I have to get this together ASAP. He's pushing me hard. I think anybody in this room that has a boss can relate to complaining about your boss saying,
how
hey,
is that
he's
different,
pushing me.
Ms. Brady, how is that different from, say, a bank saying we're running out of patience on this line of credit we've extended to this small business? We usually don't say the bank controls the borrower in that sense.
I think you have to look at the facts, Your Honor, in totality. In this case, it
but
was a long...
But why isn't it this analogy? You're not answering the question.
Well, because what you have here is a personal relationship that this defendant has with two separate individuals of a long-standing, months long at least, with Mr. Weaver even longer than that, nature, where it's very clear who holds the power in this relationship. These, unlike Vargas, who had no power, you know, he comes to a controlled buy, Mr. Vargas does, with only one key of coke. The buyer says, hey, I want more. What does Mr. Vargas do? He runs back, and he gets the cocaine that's requested. Mr. Weaver, on the other hand, says, hey, that's not going to happen, champ. Here's your 2 ounces. That's all you get. And by the way, I want my money. And what was the response from these?
And that's control? I mean, everybody is a manager under that. Every seller is a manager under your theory. I don't see how
no.
you could possibly be a seller and not a manager.
With respect, I think Vargas is a perfect example of how a seller is not a manager. Mr. Vargas had certain power in that, of course, he had the drugs. He had the source of supply that people wanted. But what he didn't have was any power beyond that, unlike Mr. Weaver. They said, the buyer said, I want more drugs. Mr. Vargas ran and got more drugs. On another occasion, he said, here's where the deal's going to happen. And the buyer said, no, it's not going to go down that way. Sure enough, the buyer had the control there. Mr. Weaver had these two people at his beck and call.
Ms. Brady, could he do other than stop sales?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What could the defendant do other than stop the sales? I mean, when you say I understand the distinction in the cases that you mentioned, and clearly a little different facts. But what could Weaver do other than stop the sales?
Well, he could do what he did, which was
urge them to get on with selling.
Which
more.
Was very effective, Your Honor, as you see from the record.
They probably want to continue to have this guy as a supplier. Mm-hmm.
McDonald's does that, too, with their franchisees. They give them all sorts of pressure and incentives to perform well.
And I would submit that McDonald's Corporation does exercise some management and supervision.
That's a whole different body of law. Whether it's Shell station, BP stations or franchisees. I frankly remember trying a heroin case where the leaders and organizers dictated the packaging for branding. That's control. That I understand. This seems a little more attenuated, frankly.
Your Honor, I think that the Brown case pointed out the central concern is in enhancing this, in giving this role enhancement, is the relative responsibility. The district court is in the best position to assess. The district court here had sentenced six other co-defendants, and this court looked at those seven factors in application note four, applied, found three of them did apply, found that Mr. Weaver, who had this carte blanche authority to dictate how this and manage how this conspiracy would be run, the amounts, the timing, the rate at which the drugs were sold, which is what he did through that pressure that he applied to both these distributors.
Isn't that just dialogue? Let's take Mr. Weaver, who sits in his backyard and coming up from the basement wherever he makes his meth, and two of his regulars are the two individuals here. And they come around all the time, and they're two of maybe a half a dozen people. I don't know the range beyond the facts here. And this exchange occurs every time they come by. You know, you could be a little quicker. I'd like to sell more. I can produce more for you. Do we have dialogue much beyond that, Ms. Brady? That's all I'm saying. He isn't saying if you don't deliver right away, pay me right away, there isn't even implicit, it seems to me, in the conversation anything to suggest I'm going to cut you off. Although even if that was what he had, what else?
It wasn't implicit, but I think Your Honor raises the point, though. That's yet another facet of the control over the conspiracy that Mr. Weaver exercised. You said these buyers would come by. That didn't happen. Mr. Weaver said, here's how this is going to go down.
Well, that's what it says. Look, I work at the factory till 3. Yeah, don't come to the backyard until 4 o'clock because I'm not home. I mean, what the timing... What does that affect? How soon they get on the street to sell?
I believe just the point that I'd try to make, Your Honor, would be that that was one more facet of how Mr. Weaver controlled how this would occur.
But they all weren't sellers control in that sense. All sellers control the venue where the sale is going to take place. All sellers control the quantity that they're able to get their hands on to sell, whether they're producing it or getting it from somebody else. All sellers control the price. All sellers control the terms of payment. I don't see where we get the control of the recipient. It's a take-it-or-leave-it basis.
With respect, Your Honor, I disagree. And I think United States versus Vargas very clearly sets forth that sellers don't always control the venue. Mr. Vargas was not allowed to do that.
Well, they don't. Maybe they don't care. I mean, you know, I think you're reading an awful lot into Vargas, frankly. Vargas, of course, describes the facts of that particular case. But I don't think there's language in Vargas that says this is an if and only if situation. Some sellers are more than happy to sell at a number of different venues. Maybe Mr. Vargas was happy to run off and do what he did.
I think under that case, he wasn't happy to do that. He was overruled, and he didn't have the power to insist on it in terms of...
But that doesn't mean that these people, that Mr. Weaver in particular is a seller, is doing anything but setting his own terms.
Ms. Brady, could I ask you to elaborate on something you said, just if I could just have a moment, about the other six defendants? I hadn't been aware there were that many co-defendants, and sort of, could you just lay out the structure for us as you see it?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Weaver was at the top of this conspiracy as the source of supply. He personally distributed to two co-defendants, Mr. Wilkie and Ms. Dale. The three folks beneath them were all individuals who
Retailers or couriers?
Well, folks that Mr. Wilkie or Ms. Dale would supply to.
Okay.
Mr. Weaver had no interaction with those lower-level folks.
But
Your Honor,
they were all part of the same case?
And they were, Your Honor.
The district judge saw them as part of that? Okay.
Part of the same conspiracy, of which Mr. Weaver was the leader.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Brady, you have ably represented the government today, but I want to ask you, in your research, have you ever found a case with less compelling facts for control in this case, as you prepared for today, that you might give us as a new floor?
Where they did find leadership?
Yeah.
Judge, I can't tell you one right off the top of my
head. I didn't mean to trap you, but I think if we were to accept your position, we might be creating that new factual floor, so to speak.
I think if you fail to look at all of the factors together, it is problematic. I think in total, when you look at all the elements that Mr. Weaver controlled, I do believe the manager or supervisor.
He's a controlling personality, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Mr. Baldwin?
Thank you. Just to clarify, Mr. Weaver pled guilty to a conspiracy where he had contact with two individuals. There were four other individuals that were also indicted. And the transcript is quite clear that he exerted no control and had no contact even with anyone other than Dale and Wilkie.
His position is he didn't even know those other four?
The position was government had wiretaps, took texts, everything else, and when asked, the agent who said, I've reviewed every text, reviewed every phone call, he may have talked to one of them on the phone to pass the phone to somebody else, but never had any direct contact with anyone else other than Dale or Wilkie.
Well, why would he have had any contact below Wilkie and Dale?
Well, if he's in control, he certainly would be in control of his employees then. And that's why this is not a case where this enhancement is correct, because he didn't exert any control over anyone other than himself.
All right.
Thank you.
Ms. Brady, thank you. Mr. Baldwin, you have our thanks. Additionally, you have our thanks for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Weaver. Case is taken under advisement.